Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, we have been without basketball. Well, technically, we've been without Lakers basketball for about a week or so, roughly a week. I'm going insane. I might not make it.
You have to deal with some harsh realities and, you know, like, be like, oh, this is my life without basketball. This is a disaster.
Jen's like, I will say, though, anything to do.
I will say it is what keeps me sane in these times. It's an honor to podcast with the LeBron James of podcasting, such as yourself.
All right. I want to be clear here. I did a podcast with Harrison. And that stupid Joe Vardon report came up where it was like the Lakers are worried about LeBron James' health. And I was like, yeah, I'm sure David is worried about my health for Locked On Lakers. Because, like, it'd be kind of tough to host Locked On Lakers if I wasn't around, right? Now, I'm a lot more endlessly more replaceable. But, like, it's just a typical general fucking Harrison. God, that guy ruins my show without even being on my show.
All right. I expect you to barely try for most of this, but carry us toward the end.
I'll have some rant at the end that makes it like makes the score close.
All right. Sounds good. Get us to the playoffs, damn it.
So today, though, we are going to look. There has been probably too much talk. I'll cop to that. Probably too much talk about front office stuff, even getting into ownership stuff. And because I don't particularly like anybody involved in those portions of the organization, it has been highly negative. But still, the Lakers are within reach of the playoffs. If a few things break their way, they might get into the playoffs. And given the number of things that have gone wrong, both on and off the court for them this year, the fact that they still have this chance, the fact that they still have this opportunity to maybe squeeze in, there are reasons to be not, obviously I prefer better with it, but all right with it, right? Like the season has mostly been, you know, pretty frustrating, but given yes. Where they currently stand, there's a reason to at least kind of pick your head up a little bit.
I mean, they're not out of it, yeah. Right? What we said before the season was, you know, like this team's getting to the playoffs. However, if major injury LeBron James, that would be the main thing that derails them, and that has come to fruition, right? He missed 18 games, and that they went from, I think, the 4 seed to the 10th seed as it currently stands. All hope is not lost, but for me, like the end of this season, if LeBron James is still that dude, the time for him to show that is now. Mm-hmm. Signing him for me always came with the understanding that he was going to coast a lot on defense at the beginning of the season. There'd be games where he, you know, was conserving himself over the course of an 82 game season. Lakers need to play really, really well to get into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And so if he's still that dude, you know, he'll get us there, but he's got to play that level of basketball. And if he can't, that concerns me for the next couple of years of his contract. And now he's going to decline. He's 34 years old. He's not going to be what he was 2 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever. But it's just a matter of like, how much is he going to decline? Is he still capable of carrying a team the way that we've seen him?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's really what it's going to come down to. We'll find out. Even then, I'm a little nervous that, you know, it takes too much out of him in carrying the Lakers at this point. Mm-hmm. But we'll get to that when we get to that. Today, though, we're going to look back on the season that's been so far. And we are going to discuss portions of the team that are on the court. We won't talk about Luke Walton. We won't talk about Magic. We won't talk about Rob Pelinka. We won't talk about Genie. We're just going to analyze the players and the seasons that they've had so far. We're going to break that up into guards, wings, and bigs. I'm going to call this first segment early. That way we have a little bit more time to wander around in segments 1 and 2. So we're going to pay a couple bills right now, and when we come back, we're going to start with the guards. We'll probably do point guards and shooting guards for this, and we'll get into to the rest of the roster after that. All right, so let's start with the guards. We'll start with the point guards. This season, I thought, was always going to be, like, we knew LeBron was going to be really good. And then after that, it was pretty much like, we'll see how everybody else fares. And I think, you know, unfortunately, because he started the year already playing catch-up from having that surgery, a lot of people's takes on Lonzo Ball and just in players in general have to do with first impressions. So he had a little bit of catching up to do for the rest of the season. But by the time he went down, he was legitimately really good. He was playing legitimately really good basketball. How would you grade if you we'll do all of these on like on an A through F, maybe even incomplete. But if you were to hand out grades, we'll start with Lonzo Ball. What grade would you give Lonzo so far?
Just on what he'd done up until that point in the totality of the season, probably a C minus, somewhere in there. And that's with the caveat that it was really starting to click for him. Now, in that time where it was starting to click for him, that was without LeBron. And that is, I'm looking for those two to really pick up the pace, you know, once Lonzo comes back, I want to see them vibe together. I thought Lonzo at the beginning of the year was too deferential to LeBron and just playing LeBron's style of play, and that's it. I would like to see Lonzo be himself alongside LeBron, and now that's not entirely in his power, right? There's Luke Walton has to cooperate with that. LeBron James has to cooperate with that, right? Now, that doesn't mean that it's not like a one or the other type of thing, but there are places where Lonzo can be more assertive alongside LeBron where he hasn't been. His defense has been really good throughout the season. Mm-hmm. And
it was getting better. Like, it was literally, you could chart how he was getting healthier and he was feeling more comfortable on that side of the court. It was wild to watch.
Absolutely. I've actually seen some very encouraging signs of progress with Lonzo where I thought he was using his physicality more over the last 10 games or so before he got hurt. He was getting more attempts at the rim and converting at a higher rate than he was at the beginning of the season. He looked to me like a guy that was starting to figure some things out. Even with LeBron out, I think there are some things that he was starting to apply and be like, yeah, this is the guy that we've been talking about, been waiting for. And unfortunately, just that ankle turn in the Houston game really cut that short. And what could have been a long stretch of that just ended up being a 5 or 7 game sample of like, oh, this is this dude right here, right?
Yeah.
So it's for me a C or a C minus, but with the caveat that there's the potential for an A, you know, in terms of what he can be if you start it from when he comes back and going forward. What do you give him?
I would agree with the C minus, something I'm altogether comfortable or knowledgeable of in undergrad. But I do want to say though that for all of these guys that we're talking about, I would weight this season as like, these next 25 games are the final that you pass or fail your class based off of.
Right.
Like if things don't turn around, like Lonzo could have had the C, you know, it started to look a little bit more promising, but if he doesn't come back 100% or if he comes back and doesn't quite figure things out with LeBron, that really drops that grade significantly. Just like if he comes back and he does figure these things out, that C minus can jump all the way up there just because this final, this is where we find out what the Lakers are about.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes it's kind of like those, you don't like superhero movies, but in all of those superhero movies, you go through that like kind of, you kind of trudge through the middle part of the movie, and then it gets real, and you know exactly when it's going to start getting real, right? Usually there's like that scene where they say, we got you some new toys, right? And either people show up or come back, and it's really go time. Like, this is where the Lakers are at right now, and you don't really understand the analogy because you don't like superhero movies. Let's talk about Rajon Rondo. Rajon Rondo is an incomplete to me. He's an incomplete.
I think that's fair. That's fair. For me, so he's played in 23 games of the Lakers 57, broke his hand twice, and was suspended early in the season. He's been he's been about what I expected, right? And for me, like, this is all graded on a curve, like, for my level of expectations. Fair or not, right? For a particular guy. If I were to give him a grade, it'd be probably a D or a D plus. He's been really bad on defense. Like, I knew he wasn't a good defender anymore, but he's been just absolutely atrocious on that end of the court.
Where he hasn't been starting.
Right. And his offensive contributions haven't been enough to make up for that. All of these are hard to give letter grades on, though, because we haven't had the whole squad all at once, right? So, like, Rondo wasn't signed with the intention of him being the starting point guard. It was signed with him, you know, playing 20 to, you know, 24 minutes off of the bench and having a role like that. And that really, like, him and Lonzo have been ships passing in the night for much of the season in terms of, you know, we haven't had both of those guys available all that often. And when we did, it was early in the season when Lonzo was still getting his footing coming back from an injury. And so, like, we haven't really had them right at the same time. So I totally get giving him an incomplete type of grade. It just, if you are judging him on those 23 games that he's played, I don't think he's played particularly well.
Yeah, I agree completely. And, you know, again, Lonzo is probably going to miss at least another week, I would say. We haven't gotten an official update, but I would probably venture a guess based on the type of injury that he had. They talked about grade 3 sprains, which those are three words you don't want to hear in the same sentence ever. And then Lonzo has never been a quick healer to this point in his career. So, you know, Rondo is still going to have to carry probably more than was expected of him. But again, like, while it isn't fair to expect him to be able to carry that burden, when you think about how he was hyped up this idea of him, it's hard for me to say, like, and the type of player that he was signed instead of, like, it's hard for me to say, well, you know, go try your best, buddy. It's hard to isolate from that.
I think it's okay to give a guy like that expectations and think he should perform to a certain level. He outplayed Damian Lillard in a playoff series less than a year ago. Now, that's not something he's going to do over 82 games, and he's been injured. But there is, I think, a reasonable level of expectation that when you sign a guy to a $9 million deal, especially in the type of market that they had, that if the need arises, he can step into that starting spot and contribute toward wins. And he has done that in a few games, but more often than not, he's been such a liability on the defensive end that a lot of the Lakers' worst games have coincided with him playing big minutes at the point guard position.
Yeah. Last question before we move on to shooting guards. Do you think the Lakers should have headed into the season with another point guard? Like, it's probably easy, not to err on the side of hindsight, you know, because it's so easy to say, like, because those guys have gotten hurt. But do you think they could have predicted that these guys would have gotten hurt as often as they did?
No, I don't think that. I mean, Lonzo, maybe because he's never really been the most durable guy, even going back to college. That's still my biggest concern with his ability to hit his ceiling is, will he be healthy enough to do it? I think the one thing that's fair to criticize without the benefit of hindsight is Lakers have so many ball handlers on this team that I think it would have been wise to sign like a 3-and-D type of guy. So, for example, Shabazz Napier was available, and he was picked up by Brooklyn to basically be that third point guard behind Russell and Spencer Dinwiddie. Dinwiddie's gotten hurt, and Napier's been able to step into that second unit type of role. With all of the ball handlers that the Lakers have in the front court, you don't necessarily need a point guard in the vein of a Rondo or even Lonzo, but a guy who can, like, defend the position and knock down the occasional open shot that's created. Derek Fisher was a guy who, you know, back in the day fit that type of bill. I think there are guys like that out there that the Lakers, with Napier being the main guy that comes to my mind, that I think the Lakers could have addressed that rather than, say, sign Michael Beasley. I think that would have been a better use of that money.
Yeah, I just don't think, given the type of play, like, back in, like, the 90s or the 80s, where defense wasn't such a priority and you were allowed to, like, right now, the type of defense that these guys are playing right now is insane. The type of guys that they have to defend right now are insane. And that puts extra miles on you. And I just don't see, I just don't see going into a season with only two guys at any one position. That makes me nervous.
They didn't highly enough of Caruso to bring him up when these injuries happened. Like, he shouldn't have been on the roster in the first place.
Yeah, that's another good point. All right, let's take a quick second here, and when we come back, we're going to hammer out shooting guards, wings, and bigs all in the third segment. Shooting guards and wings, they kind of overlap a little bit here, so we'll see how we handle all of that. All right, so let's start here with the shooting guards. And heading into the season, I thought this was going to be one of the team's strengths. I actually really liked how I was a little nervous about having Lonzo, who was fairly unproven, and Rajon Rondo, who is old and not particularly great in the regular season. So point guards made me nervous. But heading into this season, KCP was coming off of a fairly solid season for the Lakers last year, and Josh Hart was showing promise as an older second-year player who could slide in if need be. And then, you know, you had guys who could spare those guys, like Fee and Lance to a lesser extent because he's more of a small forward. How would you grade the totality of the position of shooting guard this season?
Probably a C-minus again. Yeah. I think KCP's defense hasn't been as good as it was last year. He's been a guy that I think has pouted a little bit about his role. And there's been, like, watching a guy like TJ McConnell blow by him. Like, KCP's way too talented of a defender for some of the things that have happened to have happened. His shooting has been streaky, and that's kind of the nature of him. He's at 35%, 34.8 from the three-point arc. But I don't know if you remember last year, like, he averaged 5.2 rebounds per game, which was a career high for him. That's down to 2.8. Now his minutes dropped from 33 to 24, but he's still not nearly, he's not making like the hustle plays. He's not as dynamic as I thought he was last year. He's a guy that I don't expect him to be a perfect player. And I'm aware of his flaws and his weaknesses, as I think most Laker fans are. I don't think he's doing as much as he can. I was actually pretty happy with Josh Hart until the knee injury started really bothering him, which I think coincided with LeBron. I don't know when that happened, but when LeBron went out, Josh went way down, and obviously the injury impacts that. But I was a lot happier with Josh prior to that. He was doing his job, right? He was hitting threes in the high 30s. He's not a particularly talented perimeter defender, in my opinion, but he was holding it down in the post. He was, you know, part of a defense that was surprising people, even if he's not very good on the perimeter as a defender. I thought Josh was mainly doing his job, but since LeBron got hurt, he's been awful. Now, how much that's the injury, you know, but so overall, it's hard to be too excited about him at this point due to what he's done over this last month and a half.
Yeah. Look, the Lakers needed any and all shooters to live up to their billing as shooters this season.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
And neither of these guys, I think both guys took steps back from their ability to shoot last season, right? Mm-hmm. That couldn't have happened this year. And I think that's really hurt the Lakers offensively, but also to a certain extent defensively, right? Defenses play better when you're hitting shots, not just from the standpoint of, like, you feel better about yourself, you were scoring points, and it's going to get you more willing maybe to go out there and challenge yourself defensively. But also, when you're missing three-pointers and you're missing wide-open three-pointers, that usually gets people started in transition. And that, I think, those guys not being able to hit shots this year the way that I thought they were going to be able to hit shots this year has been one of the more disappointing aspects of the season. That said, like I've said with Lonzo Ball, like we said with Rajon Rondo, if over the next 25 games they get back to being 38%+ shooters from three, and they help the Lakers get into the playoffs and maybe even a playoff run from there, that's, I think, a lot of where this is one of the starting points where that turnaround is going to happen. And if that happens, then, you know, the overall C-, which I agree, I would probably give him a D, but the overall grade can immediately jump right up there.
And Reggie Bullock changes that a lot.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
It changes the outlook of what that could be.
Yeah. Yeah. A point there. We can't really give a Reggie Bullock a grade here thus far, but what Reggie Bullock allows you to do is if KCP is going to pout, as he has for a lot of this year, you could just tell him, fine, fuck off and go over there. Like,
and if KCP's playing well, you can play him together. Yeah. Bullock's big enough to defend the three. Mm-hmm. So he makes KCP a luxury rather than a necessity.
Yeah. Let's look at Lance Stephenson's do you want to have the LeBron conversation or do you want to, I kind of want to just leave LeBron for last.
That's fine.
Let's have the conversation then about the wings that are on the team then. Brandon Ingram, Lance Stephenson, Kyle Kuzma. How do you feel about them in aggregate?
So with Brandon, I've actually been fairly happy with Brandon's season, especially how he's played. His season's kind of mirrored his first 2 years in that he really hit his stride at the beginning of January in his first two seasons. And I think that he's done that to an extent since the beginning of this January this season. For me, he was a guy that, like, everybody else's expectations, not everybody, but a lot of people's expectations of him were, like, way higher. And then I've felt this collective disappointment in him from Laker fans that he's not, you know, the clear number two option, averaging 20 a game or what have you.
He's never going to be that.
Right. Well, that's the thing is that, like, yeah, what I wanted to see from him, I wanted to see two things, and he's done one of them. I wanted to see him work on his catch and shoot mechanics and be able to get shots up at a decent clip. He has not been able to do that, shooting 28.6% on 1.7 3-point attempts per game, which is even fewer than last year, which was 1.8. So he wasn't able to do that, but he's gotten a lot better on the defensive end. And that was the second thing that I wanted to see. He's a guy now, when he's not on the court, the Lakers wing defense is noticeably worse.
Yeah.
And he's done a nice job of growing on that end. I also think that since LeBron has returned on the offensive end, he's done a pretty good job of fitting in with him when he didn't before LeBron got hurt. He's not dominating the ball as much. Like, when Brandon gets it, I want him to make a quick decision. If you're going to attack, go ahead, attack, but do it quickly. Don't dribble the air out of the ball, which is I thought he was doing at the beginning of the season. He's doing less over the last few games with LeBron. With Kuz, it's, you know, he's a guy for me, like the open threes that he's missed.
You have to hit those, and
you put it perfectly, man. Like, there are enough guys on this team that you don't expect to be contributors in threes. That the guys that you do expect, they needed all those guys to show up this year. And Kuz shooting at, you know, 32% or so from 3-point range. And if you look at his breakdown of, like, his wide open three attempts, nobody within 6 feet of him shooting 33% on those. Most of the league shoots 38-39% on those. So I've been a little disappointed in Kuz's ability to do that, but there's no denying how he's fit alongside LeBron on the offensive end. I'll stop rambling about that. What do you see about from them collectively, you know, the wing situation?
It's tough. Ingram was always going to be a complicated grade because his timeline is so far behind the teams right now, right? And like, so for example, what I wanted to see from Ingram this year was show me that you're starting to figure it out a little bit. It's complete, and so offensively, it was really frustrating to watch him just kind of drown for a good portion at the beginning of the year. And then lately, he's started to figure that out a little bit, right? So just by – I would say just with that, if I was to average those two parts of the season together, I'd say about a C, right? Defensively – so every time you hear somebody talk about, like, the game looks like it's slowed down for a player, that's almost always in reference to an offensive player. Mm-hmm. But I've really loved watching the game slow down for him defensively where – like, sometimes I get really frustrated watching Josh Hart because the game is still too fast for him defensively, and he only speeds the game up for himself by over-pressuring.
Right.
And like, Ingram, as he's gotten better and as he's gotten more comfortable as a defender, what he's learned is, wait, I can actually make up for quite a bit of space just using my athleticism and length, so all I got to do is stay close enough to be able to challenge. And as he's figured that out, that's where he's become really freaking good on the defensive end.
He's taken really good angles on defense this year, And if I were to give him a letter grade, and you know, none of these are that great because Lakers have not played particularly good, but he's in the B minus C plus range for me. I've actually been mostly happy. It's been weird to be for the first couple of years, like the negative guy about Ingram.
Yeah.
And then I feel like I'm more in the middle of
you're
that.
You're just
the
Mr. Contrarian.
Of like, no, I not necessarily contrarian. Like, and I don't think my opinion's changed that much. I feel like the opinion of Laker fans has really shifted on Ingram, and there's a lot more negativity around him. And I don't think that's entirely fair for this season.
And then Lance,
he shot the three ball well.
I will say that. Yeah. Well, the Lakers' two best 3-point shooters in terms of percentage are Rondo and Lance, right?
Yeah.
That's not great, Bob. But no. Look, I'll say this. If you're to take into account expectations and realistic expectations in the context under which Lance was going to make sense on this roster, this is the closest he was ever going to come to not being a complete disaster, I think.
Yeah.
Him being able to shoot, if you expected anything from Lance Stephenson heading into the season, you were doing it wrong.
Yeah, and I think that for the most part, he's been what we could have hoped from him, you know, and now that's not a particularly high bar, but he's shooting near career highs in terms of efficiency from the field. He's at, 54.3% true shooting, shooting the ball at a 38% clip from three on a team that really needs guys to be able to do that. He has his moments of adventure, and I understand the dislike of him, but he hasn't been, like, he's been fine for me.
Yeah.
To me, I like, based on my expectations of him, I'd give him a solid B, honestly, because I he's outperformed what I thought we'd get from him.
There's a line from Harry Potter where there's a grade. It's an E, and it's for exceeds expectations.
And, right.
And one of the characters said that technically speaking, we should have all I should have gotten straight E's because me showing up to the test should have exceeded your expectations. That's kind of how I feel about Lance Stephenson.
Right.
Ironically, I believe the character who said that's named Fred, which is pretty great.
There you go.
Let's talk about the bigs then. JaVale McGee, Ivica Zubac, Tyson Chandler, Mo Wagner gets an incomplete because he was always probably going to get an incomplete.
Right.
I would probably say the player that I'm most disappointed with, just given the way that the season has gone this year, has probably been JaVale McGee.
And that's so strange because he started so well.
So right? Bonkers.
Pre-pneumonia and post-pneumonia, two completely different players.
Yeah. Now, I'd be completely remiss, completely unfair to not weigh his pneumonia into that, because pneumonia, anybody who's ever dealt with it, even a small, like a slight pneumonia, technically it's an oxymoron, slight pneumonia. It's not something that anybody deals with and comes out feeling anywhere near how they were after that, right? While having to compete at this being the highest level of basketball playing. Period. So with that said, I am obviously factoring that into my grade. If he doesn't have pneumonia, then he probably winds up having a really to pretty good season. The moping to me really.
I was going to bring that up. Yes, I was going to bring that up too, man. Like in this, like the Lakers are in a bad mood. We can all see it, right?
Yeah.
And they've been an unhappy group, and we've talked ad nauseum about the external factors, about the front office and all of that. There's also a right way to handle adversity in a wrong way. And he's handled it very poorly in my
opinion. The worst on the roster.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, there was a report from Brad Turner that part of the thinking on getting rid of Zubac was to maybe get JaVale back to playing well again. And it's just like, if he's one of the guys who I was told was a character guy, a leader guy, you can't have to get rid of a player just to appeal to that guy and get him to play basketball hard again. That was a tough look. How would you look at Zubac for the time that he was here?
I mean, Zoo really grew. You know, he looked like the guy that was back on track for what he was as a rookie. After a really disappointing second season, I thought he was the best center on the roster when they traded him.
I agree.
And it's tough, man. Like, they needed a guy. like Tyson Chandler is a guy where he's either got gas in the tank or he doesn't. And it's, I think, very apparent early on. And I think he, by and large, tries his best and he's given best, but he just doesn't have much in the tank anymore. And Zoo was a guy, if JaVale's moping or ineffective due to the, you know, lasting impact from the pneumonia, Tyson Chandler doesn't have much to in the tank. Zoo was a guy that was going to be able to provide you, and I think should have been the guy getting the lion's share of the minutes at the five spot. So Zoo was really good, man. I'd give him a B plus somewhere in there. And it's just unfortunate that he was gone at such a cheap price. I understand the Lakers needed more outside shooting. Letting Brook Lopez and Thomas Bryant walk and then filling that hole
with a worse shooter.
Right, with a guy like Muscala and then trading a guy like Zoo. I don't know. I think we'd be in a better position had we kept Thomas Bryant and Zoo rather than what we ended up doing. But, you know, it is what it is. But I was impressed with what Zubats did.
They'd be in a better spot if they would have just waived Beasley and then used an extra roster spot to go after Frank Kaminsky. Like, that's... All right. I think that's it for the bigs. It's time to have the LeBron conversation. How do you feel about the season LeBron has had? It's tough, again, because he's missed 18 games, right? He missed just under what will be the quarter of a season. Would you use that to say that it's an incomplete? Would you use that as, you know, how are you defining this? It's really tough for me.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's far and away the best player on the team. Mm-hmm. He's still one of the best players in the NBA.
Yep.
He's the guy more than anybody else on the team that my grade or my opinion of what his season is will be defined by the last 25 games of the season. Because we knew all along, like I said earlier, the pacing himself, all that goes into that. There were times... a couple of times, and enough for it for me to be like, okay, he's still got it before he got injured, where I was like, okay, it's there. Like, he had an amazing game against Portland. Miami. He had a, you know, Miami, right? Just this, like, yeah, this is still that dude. I don't know if the groin injury is still going to impact him, whether that's conditioning or what, basically, can he access that over the last 25 games? So LeBron's a guy that's been mostly what I expected him to be, but part of that expectation was you have these extra gears that you can access when the Lakers need it, and now is the time that he needs to access those.
Yeah. So I'm disappointed on two things.
Okay.
I'm disappointed on how he handled the trade deadline. I thought at some point he needed to kind of rally the troops at some point and just kind of say, like, all right, this is the team we got. We gotta try to figure this out together. We're still waiting on that.
Can he do that, though, when he's so influential with the off-the-court stuff? Like, if you're Kyle Kuzma and LeBron goes up to you, I saw an interaction like this in the Philly game where there was a turnover where it was Kuz's fault, and LeBron was like, look, if you're going to give me a target hand, I'm going to throw it at the target hand. Don't pull it away. Kuz walked right past him. You know what I mean? And I think part of that, no, that's me inferring, right? But like, can he be a leader and have influence on the GM components? Like, you're not going to lead me if you just tried to trade my ass last week.
Yeah.
Like, how much am I going to listen to you? You know what I mean?
Yeah. But I still think you got to try, and I don't think he's tried. You know, I don't really sense that he went out there and at any point since it all went down has been like, look, either, because I think there's only one real way that he could have handled this is if he said, look, yeah, there were a ton of rumors out there. Yeah, Anthony Davis was on the table and he's a client, and I would have liked to have him on the team. All of that, my opinion on all of that might change. Correct me on this. Prove me wrong. Show me that I was being an ass, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think he's ever really tried to do that. The other way that I was kind of disappointed in him this year is just the passive aggressiveness, man. It's so taxing. It's
I mean, but we knew that, man.
Well, like, yeah, but what I'm not going to do here, I'm not going to get myself in trouble and have somebody have a soundbite where I say, like, Kobe was a real leader. But to a certain extent, man, like, be an adult. You know, like, but like, just show if you're going to if you are going to be that upset with everybody, if you're going to be if you're going to have the frustrations that you have with the situation around you, at some point, like, sack up and say, yeah, I some of these things need to change. And I just feel like, you know, we talked about how JaVale McGee kind of moped through things. And look, on to a certain extent, hoping that a minimum guy handles that kind of situation well kind of says why you might be in trouble in the first place. But when a max guy and this guy who was painted as like this franchise savior just kind of mopes throughout this the franchise that he really needs to help lift up in these times, and he mopes throughout the entire procession of it, like, to a certain extent, I was like, yeah, I you know what, having experienced both him and Kobe, I think I would rather I do prefer the Kobe's handling of that situation.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair distinction in that there were a couple of times in Kobe's career, he had one game against Sacramento where he was, you know, passive aggressively trying to prove a point and wasn't going to shoot. The Phoenix game and then the Celtics game six in 2008. To me, those two games. So the Phoenix game, I don't want to get too off topic here, but the Lakers went up 3-1 in that series largely because Kobe shifted into facilitator mode for most of that series. He was averaging, I think, less than 20 through the first four games, but he was distributing. Lamar was killing him. And so, like, Kobe really tried to take over that game in the second quarter. I think he had like 15 points. By the time of the second half, like, to me, people expect fake hustles sometimes.
Yeah.
Phoenix was blowing the Lakers out.
Yeah.
And Kobe had just put up like 15 or in the second quarter, and they were still Phoenix was scoring every single time. So because Kobe, when they were down 30, didn't like wow you with his attempt to, I'm like, come on, man. Same thing is true with like the game six where the Lakers lost in 2008 finals, where they lost by 39 to the Celtics. Like, anyhow, the by and large, Kobe was out there emptying the clip when he needed to. And it's funny, this season is so similar to that Dwight Howard season, right? Yeah. Lakers have the exact same record through 57 games, 28-29. You remember how damn good Kobe was before he tore his Achilles?
Yeah.
And that was a dude going out there trying to empty the clip every single night. LeBron is on the all-time great list and very high up on it.
Yeah.
What bothers me more than anything, and when I make these complaints and people read me back his stat line for the night, I don't want to hear it. Yeah. I want to see a guy that's out there emptying the clip. Give us everything that you got to be able to win this game. And if not, if you want to give up on this season, man, fold it up.
Yeah.
But like this, the moping and the not going all that and not, you know, rotating on defense, just try. I want to see him try harder over these last 25 games than he has throughout the rest of the season, because the whole point of him not trying for the rest of the season is so that he's ready for the end of the year when we need him. Guess what? We need him.
Yeah. Well, that Atlanta game, I thought, perfectly summarized my problems with him. Right. That Atlanta game, he had an incredible stat line, right? It was like 28, 9, and 8 and something like that.
Oh, no, he had like 15. He was brilliant as a passer that game, right?
But it's still like there were significant chunks of the game where he wasn't going into the beneath the 3-point line on offense, you know? And like that's, yes, he's very capable of dominating a game. Even he can dominate Atlanta, obviously, in his sleep, right? I want to see him like you know, that Miami game. He was driving to the basket whenever he wanted, and maybe he isn't physically there. That's altogether possible, right? It's something to weigh into this as well. But what I want to see over these next 25 games is like, we know I've acknowledged, I have him above Kobe on my all-time list. I don't know if you can have Kobe above him on your all-time list. I'm not going to go game in, game out and compare him to Kobe here. But I do want to see, like, show me some fire. Show me some pride, you know? We heard him talk and wax poetic before the season on what the Lakers mean to the NBA and why he chose the Lakers and how much it means to him to be able to have this opportunity and play for the Lakers and wear this jersey that all of these all-timers have ever worn. And yet we saw what we saw before the All-Star break. And what I want to see is over these next 25 games, show me that pride, man. Show me that pride, or else don't try to sell me on bullshit pride at the beginning of next season.
He's also one of the smartest players in NBA history, along with all of his physical talents. he knows exactly what the impact of him not making a defensive rotation or him not closing out to a capable 3-point shooter. He knows what the results of those things are. So, like, I understand him conserving himself and all of that, but he's still even like that's more than anything else on the defensive end. I want him to take some ownership of his own play. I think a lot of guys will follow his lead.
Yes.
If LeBron is out there trying hard on the defensive end.
Yeah, that was the last point I wanted to make.
That other guys are going to do that. So to me, like, I don't expect him to be a great defender every night the way that he once was. But this is the time, these 25 games, where he needs to step it up on that end especially.
Yeah, the Lakers were always only going to go so far as he was going to take them. That was always going to be how the season was going to play out. I didn't anticipate it was going to be to this extent, where not only will wins and losses come based on how far he's willing to push it, but the entire Lakers roster really picks up when he picks up. We saw it perfectly in that Boston game, I thought, where he just kind of sleepwalked, and I was surprised that he was sleepwalking in Boston, somewhere he legitimately hates, a city he legitimately hates. And then he played center for a little bit, and he picked things up, and the entire Lakers, the bench, everybody picked things up around him. And I'm, like you said, he's a basketball genius. There's no way he hasn't noticed this as well.
Yes.
He's going to have to notice it. He's going to have to play up to that. And if he isn't going to rally people with his words, if he isn't capable of doing that kind of thing, if he doesn't want to do that kind of thing, if he doesn't care to say, like, sorry, Kuz, you know, maybe we'll figure these things out next year. Fine, but pick things up with your play, and that's at least the logical place to start.
Kobe was an SOB, right, and was that way with his teammates, but he could always make – you never had a – Kobe is not playing hard.
Yeah.
Very rarely did.
Yeah.
And he was not a good defender toward the end of his career either.
He's a DH.
But to me, like, when I talk about Kobe in these glowing terms especially, like – Kobe walked out of Staples Center for the last time after he knocked down those two free throws after he tore his Achilles. It's not the guy on the retirement tour that I'm talking about. I'm talking 2013 and earlier Kobe. And that was a dude that, like, went out there and, like, when he played like that and he was an SOB to his teammates, he could credibly say, I'm holding you to the same standard that I hold myself. Mm-hmm. And that is a key component of leadership that I would like to see from LeBron. Totally understanding the physical maintenance and then the injury that he has, I want to see him be able to credibly say, I'm holding you to the same standard that I hold myself for these last 25 games.
Completely agree. This was fun. It was fun talking about basketball. I'm looking forward to, like, watching basketball again.
Like, I just don't want to, like, hate these guys. Like I love, and don't get me wrong, I hope everyone knows, I love them. I love the Lakers. And you can be in a relationship with someone and hate them and love them at the same time.
Yeah.
I'm like, I've spent so much time this season just, like, at the games or on my couch watching on TV, just muttering, you MFers, like, to myself, like, stop. Like, and they've got it in them. They really do. Like, we've been in such, like, a bad mood, and it's been such a bad stretch with the trade deadline and bad losses, but we forget how good this team was and was on pace to be before LeBron got hurt. And, like, they've got it in them, and that's why it's irritating when they don't do that. But they got to be able to turn the page on what happened on the trade deadline, because if they play with the same mood and the same energy level, this season's going to be over sooner rather than later.
Yeah. It'll end quick, too. The schedule is not easy to start. That'll do it, though, for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. This was fun. Talking about basketball was fun. I hope you guys enjoyed that. We will be back to talk. Well, Pete will be back here after the Thursday night game. I'm still going to see if something happens. We'll see how Wednesday goes. If not, then I'll figure out something for the game. But for right now, thanks for tuning in today. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.